We are about six or seven psukim into the Haftarah of Parshas Va'era, which began with two psukim about the Geula, which we understood to mean the Geula, they're coming back for the Bayis Sheni. And then the psukim which spoke against Mitzrayim, we're up to Pasuk Dalet, the Pasuk V'nasati HaChayim B'L'Chayecha, the Navi had said that Parai, the same dynasty or the same series of dynasties from the time of Mitzrayim, would now be punished. What Parai has to do with the Churban Bayis Sheni, Churban Bayis Rishon, with this time period of Yecheskel, is a mystery to most people, but only if you don't learn Navi. Nebuchadnezzar, you all know, was the king of Babel, and was the one who brought about the Churban Bayis Rishon. What you may not know is that prior to the ascendancy of Nebuchadnezzar, Mitzrayim was the world power. Egypt was the world power, and as a matter of fact, if you'll remember from the kinnis of Tisha B'Av, I could say if you'll remember from when you learned Malachim Beis, but more likely to remember from the kinnis of Tisha B'Av, when Yeshua HaMelech was killed 23 years before the Korban, it was by Parai, who had come through Eretz Yisrael on his way to Ashur, part of his battles with Nebuchadnezzar. So that Parai was the world power right before Nebuchadnezzar defeated him in battle. Actually, with three defeats, three great battles spanning about 40 years, in which Nebuchadnezzar destroyed Parai. So here in this Nevuah, Parai, who had been faulted for making himself a god, is told by the Navi, "V'nasati hachim b'lechayecha, I will put the hook in your jaw, as one catches a fish, v'dbakti degasi arecha b'kaskas aysecha, and as, imagine you go fishing, he catches big fish, and hanging on to his scales are a bunch of other little fish, v'alisicha b'tochi arecha, a real great catch for the fisherman. I'll pull him out from the river. He's called the gasi arecha because secha tidbak, and all of your the other fish are attached to you.
Question: what kaskesis is? It's not here in kaskesis. In the Gemara, it's right from here. It's the scales. The little fish are hanging onto the scales.
The scales. Well, kaskesis is a scale. It's interesting in Digduk. Kaskesis is found to refer to scales and to refer to armor, to both. So in
shield.
Armor, shield, because really armor could be a lot of, like scales, a lot of, the Sefer Pam gave me many years ago on Digduk, he says that when you have the same word, that can mean two things. It means two things because they're similar. A yad is a hand and a yad is a handle of a pot. Because they're very similar, they're the way they handle things. The difference, there's a difference in Hebrew between two identical words that are found in two ways that in plural they're pronounced differently. So that's yodois hakelim.
Right.
Handles are called yad, but they're yodois. And hands of a human being are called yodayim. So that the same word, when it's used in two different ways, changes in the Lashon Rabbim into two different ways of expressing it. Same thing with kaskeses, when it refers to the scales of the fish, it's kaskesos, as it is here, kaskesosecha. When it refers to armor, it's kaskasim, we have by Golias. Kaskasim, because even though it's the same idea, the same word, but in Hebrew, the language makes a distinction sometimes in the Lashon Rabbim, between the two words. At any rate, getting back here, the Navi foretells the defeat of Egypt, of Parai, l'tashticha hamidbara, and I will spread you out in the desert, oyscha v'eskol degasi arecha p'nei hasada tipol. You will be spread out on the open field, and fish can't survive out in the midbar and open field. L'aysi aseif, l'aysi kabeitz. You will not be rescued, you will not be gathered. L'chaya sa'oretz aloif ha'shamayim nisaticha l'achla. You will be fed to the birds and the animals, The Yosher Mitzrayim will recognize Hashem Yan HaYosha Mish'enes Kodno LeBeis Yisrael. Now here's an interesting thing. Because they were Mish'enes Kodno. Mish'enes is a stick that you lean on. Somebody walks with a cane. Now the stick is supposed to be strong. Mish'enes Kodno means a stick made of reeds. A stick made of reeds doesn't support. I'll explain what the mashal is in a minute. B'safsam b'cha, when they grabbed onto you, b'kaf, with their palm of their hands, teroits, you broke. U'bakato lohem kol kosef. When you have a stick to lean on, it supports you. If you don't have the stick, so you limp without the stick. A stick that cracks in your hand when you're leaning on it, God forbid, is worse than no stick at all, because then the person's entire weight falls onto the stick, and the stick pierces his arm, in this case, the exaggerated muscle, all the way up to the shoulder. And by leaning on you, you have been broken, and you have called all the loins to have to support themselves without the stick. Now, what is the muscle here of the stick? It's a reference to the treaty that was drawn between Klal Yisrael and Mitzrayim. When Nebuchadnezzar and Babel started to conquer much of the world, and Klal Yisrael felt threatened by Nebuchadnezzar, they made a treaty with Mitzrayim against Nebuchadnezzar. They made a treaty, and at least ultimately, initially, when Nebuchadnezzar attacked, Mitzrayim did threaten to set sail. But when push came to shove, the treaty did not stand. Now, to me, it's just a fascinating thing that all treaties are basically meaningless as far as coming through in the end. I'm reading now my wife left in the reading room, Martin Gilbert's biography of Churchill, which is just fascinating. It's a fascinating history of World War II. So you read about the British had this treaty with France that neither would sue for peace with Germany without the other. And of course, as soon as the French smelled a battle and they ran out of places to run, the French they violated the treaty. They did send an apology. They sent an apology before to Britain that they were not, that they violated the treaty, which is makes sense. I mean, if for your country this is good, so yesterday you make a treaty with him, and today you make a treaty with him. So that's typical of world history. But then you wait a year later, and when Germany attacks Russia, what do? So Stalin and Churchill sign a treaty. So they say, like, it makes you laugh when you read it. What's a treaty worth that neither would sue for peace without the other? The treaties in world history are just a statement of current mutual interest. They don't have really any effect on the future. And so too, Klal Yisrael made a treaty with Mitzrayim against the Nebuchadnezzar, and the treaty was worthless. Now, Kadosh Baruch Hu takes Mitzrayim to task for having been this Mishen Eskana, this false staff, this false stick, and that of course is the taina here. But be that as it may, this is the idea of Palm. They printed a Rav Palm on the Haftoros. They quote here something he often spoke about, the reliance of the State of Israel on its political friends. History often repeats itself. I'm quoting, "When one unfortunately does not learn from the mistakes of the past, in our time, the leaders of the State of Israel rely on the reed-like support of their erstwhile friends in the free world. The decades of the existence of the state, Israel has seen how the so-called expressions of friendship and support from various nations have all been evaporated and been replaced by bitter, cynical hatred. What happened to the guarantees? As the Navi Yirmiyah put it, from this alliance also you will emerge clapping your hands to your head in grief, for Hashem has rejected your guarantors, you will not succeed with them." I don't need to get into the politics of it, but the idea of one country relying on another country, it only works where the second country has its own interests at heart. There's no real, there's neither logic nor law behind any of the treaties that that are drawn, and that's the way it is. When you have the President of the United States guaranteeing the existence of Israel, you have to know that he doesn't guarantee the existence of Britain. He doesn't guarantee the existence of France or of any of the countries of the world, because he has no havamina to turn his back on them. It's only the ones that there's a, you know, when I get in the mail a letter and it says important, or it says you can just throw it straight in the garbage, because if it's important, you don't write important. And if you're secure, you don't write, you don't say never again. It's only when somebody is insecure that he has to say, he has to make such a statement. So that's the mussar really of this nevuah against Mitzrayim.
They forget what happened 800 years or so before.
Of course, it doesn't take 800 years to forget things.
I mean, the magnitude of what happened is not something.
Yeah, no, it takes a. Human beings have a very short memory. And you have to remember something else. We're talking about a time where people in the world believed in multiple gods. People in the world believed that, first it's hard to imagine why anybody would believe such a thing, but they believed in multiple gods, and that there was a god of the Jews and there was a god of the Egyptians. But that's the pshat in Rashi. Rashi says, in Yisrael, when Yisrael says, what does he say? Ki ato yadati, ki Hashem olakim. And he says, now I know, Rashi says, because Hashem does things mida keneged mida. So a modern person reads the Rashi, what in the world is Rashi talking about? Because Hashem does things mida keneged mida. Oh, that means he's God. And if he does things not mida keneged mida, what does it have to do? The answer is that in the world where everybody believed in a different gods, you believed one God controlled the oceans, and one God controlled the deserts, and one God controlled the rain. Right? Each God controlled something else. If that's true, no God could do things mida keneged mida. The God of the water has to always use water to punish, and the God of the wind always has to use wind to punish. And if you have a God that punishes mida keneged mida, that's an indication of a ability that crosses sort of the regions of each of the gods, and that's the idea of that Rashi. At any rate, here the Navi foretells the downfall of Mitzrayim once again. The Navi goes on. Hineni mevi olayich chorev, I will bring upon you a sword. Vichrati mimech adam ubehemen, I will destroy man and beast. When HaKadosh Baruch Hu punishes those from whom he helps to do tshuva, we have the idea in Rashi and Chumash that Hashem punishes first his material items. And if he doesn't get the message, his animals, he doesn't get the message, then he starts up with the person. The Vichrati Mimech Adam Ubehema, Sinaipshit says on this pasuk, that the punishment will start from Adam, that this is a decisive blow against Mitzrayim. Vaisa Eretz Mitzrayim Lishmama, and the land of Egypt will turn desolate, Vacharba, Vyadu Ki Ani Hashem, Yan Omar Yorli Vani Asisi. This is a punishment, for saying the river is mine and I have created it, or I have created myself. Different mafarshim. So there are two parts to the nevuah against Mitzrayim. One is for their not being reliable to Klal Yisrael, and one is for their declaration, Pari's declaration of himself as a god. I will be upon you and to your river. And it will be destroyed. Migdol Sivene ad Givul Kush. No human or animal will pass through the land for 40 years. Now here's a fascinating Rashi. Rashi says, what are the 40 years? In the dream of Paroi, there are how many years of hunger? So the Medrash goes this way. He says, there are actually 14. Because each dream is 7 years of hunger. Right? The seven animals are seven. And the 7 years of corn are 7. It says 14. But wait. It's mentioned in the Torah 3 times. It takes place, that's once, and then Pari tells it to Yosef, and then
Yosef tells it over.
So it's three times. So 3 times 14 is 42. So they're actually Ramazim to as many as 42 years of hunger. Now how many years of hunger actually took place?
Two.
Only 2 years of hunger took place, because when Yaakov came to Mitzrayim, the hunger ended. Since there, they're sort of hanging in the air, a chayiv of as many as 40 more years of destruction. So that's this punishment here. In Pasuk Yud Aleph, Leisavaba, Regalodim, Regal Behema, Leisavaba, there'll be a famine.
This is making up for the, well, that's what we say. We say also the brothers, because when the brothers did, so many years later, the Assyrians are ruling them out, right?
Yeah, so it seems God has a long memory. It's, when something is hanging in the air. You know, we had the very, it's actually Gemara, that in the Barad, which we have in the parasha, when Moshe Rabbeinu davens, the Barad loy nitach arza. That means even the Barad that had already started to come down from heaven, it just stopped. It didn't come down and hit the ground. Later, when Yeshua, the battle of Gai, Yeshua, by the battle of, was it, of Gai, by the Avdes HaGolmish. Yeah, so there it says that the stones came down from heaven. So there Rashi brings those stones from the Bara that suspended in the way down, so they stayed around a very long time, and later they came down. So it's a sort of an idea more than a physical suspension in the air of these stones. It's the idea that once the potential exists, you know, they say about a rabbi that if he has a speech and he's not asked to speak, the speech gets stuck in his throat. It's got to come out sometime. You know, it's got to come out at some point. You know, that's what they say. It's of course not true, but it is that way. You know, it's like, something, a woman, her husband does something and she swallows it. You can be sure it's going to come up somewhere. It's going to come out. You know, it's just gaining, growing interest on the way up. So at any rate, that's the remiss of the Arbaim Shana. When Asati says, "Subscribe Shemama b'tach Arzais Neshamos," I will put Mitzrayim desolate among the desolate lands. V'areh b'sech orim acharavos. This means it's Africa. Africa is a North Africa, at least, is a place of desert. Tiyeh Shemama Arbaim Shana v'avitzaisias Mitzrayim b'gayir v'zevisim b'aratzais. Now there is a medrash in Bishalach that when Paro was destroyed, that even the Mitzrim back at home, who didn't come along, were also destroyed. Which would seem to indicate that the land of Egypt, so to speak, came to an end at that point. That's contradicted by what we're learning here. Although in the Psukim themselves, it has no connection to the Mitzrayim of Chumash, but the way Rashi brings, this is somehow a connection. So either they were saying that they were not totally destroyed, or there's an idea which answers many difficulties in different places in Nach, that a nation can take on the identity of another nation. It's something that comes up here and there. Even though the Mitzrayim may have been physically destroyed, if other people come and take on the image of Mitzrayim and the culture of Mitzrayim, that they become the Mitzrim. Sort of a geirus among the Gaim. And that would also explain, you have the choice of these two biurim. Okay, we have the last Nevuah, and that will do God willing Thursday night. The last Nevuah of the Haftarah.